From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, we take a closer look at the Screen Actors Guild Award nominations and how they might predict Oscar voting. Then Matrix filmmaker Lily Wachowski is a producer and writer on the new TV series Work in Progress. It's about a gender nonconforming woman who's struggling with depression.
It spoke to me in terms of, you know, mental health and being a queer person, and a show that embodies people who don't get to have a voice.
All that coming up on The Frame. Nominations for the 26th annual Screen Actors Guild Awards are out. They can be a key bellwether for the Oscars because actors make up the biggest percentage of Academy Award voters. Kyle Buchanan writes the Carpetbagger column at the New York Times, and he follows all Hollywood awards very closely. First, he explains how much overlap there is between the SAG Awards and the Oscars.
A lot, as opposed to a lot of the organizations that have weighed in so far, like, you know, your dreaded Golden Globes, John.
We don't talk about them.
But we can, in contrast, which is they're about 90 eccentric voters, and the SAG committee is, I think it's something like 2,000 chosen at random, and then it's voted on by many thousands more. That is a sort of more accurate simulation of what you're going to find with the Academy, which is several thousand people. The actors are the biggest body. So what you'll find is whoever SAG nominates, I'd say probably about 4 out of 5 of those people at the least are going to get nominated for an Oscar as well.
So the SAG Awards have an equivalent of the Best Picture competition. It's called Best Ensemble.
The nominees for Outstanding Performance by a Cast in a Motion Picture are Bombshell, The Irishman, Jojo Rabbit, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and Parasite.
When you look at what's in and what's out, what are the main takeaways here?
I don't think anybody expected Parasite would get in here. Parasite, you know, obviously the foreign language sensation of the season, directed by Bong Joon-ho. It's this really fantastic Palme d'Or winning South Korean. Well, even to describe the genre would be to spoil
it. I don't know how you
bit.
Would describe it.
But this is a movie that is going to be in the Oscar race in a major way, probably picture, director, screenplay. But the thing I didn't expect, and I think the thing people probably still don't expect, is for it to get any acting nominations. That's a tricky thing. If you want to win Best Picture, you really have to have an acting nomination somewhere. For Parasite to win, then it would be overcoming two big debits, which are no acting nomination and no foreign language film has won before.
The other thing that I thought was interesting, it's an ensemble award. So if you think about movies that have just a couple of actors front and center, Marriage Story would be a good example, which picked up some acting nominations. It wasn't in the cast award nomination list. But the other one that I thought was really surprising, given that it is an ensemble film, is Little Women.
Yeah, Little Women isn't really having a great awards run so far. I mean, we should note the movie is not out yet. You know, its fortunes could turn around, especially if it becomes a big box office hit. It helps to have that wind in your sails. But yeah, the Golden Globes and SAG kind of gave it the cold shoulder. SAG, most of all, it was snubbed across the board. Even Saoirse Ronan didn't get in.
The other thing that I think has been noteworthy is there are certain actors who have been really working hard. I mean, some actors don't like to do this. And I think of Anthony Hopkins from Two Popes being somebody who doesn't really want to campaign. And then you have somebody like Taron Egerton from Rocketman. And it does feel like that part of the campaigning is starting to have results for people who are all in.
I've seen Taron Egerton at more awards events than I've seen my parents in the last few months. He is out there working it very good-naturedly. And he's up against a field of men who don't want to schmooze. He's up against people like Adam Driver, Joaquin Phoenix, Christian Bale. These people are not teddy bears. So even though you wouldn't necessarily think that Taron, with his, you know, movie that came out this summer, that hews so closely to Bohemian Rhapsody and Rami Malek that people might be tempted to just skip him, you wouldn't necessarily think that he would be Oscar's cup of tea with all of these big men fronting big Best Picture nominees, but you can't count him out if he's out there, you know, hitting the publicity trail and the other guys aren't.
He is in a movie that's not getting a lot of attention outside of his performance. Mm-hmm. And there is a woman who is, I think, probably the presumptive favorite for Best Actress in a very similar situation, and that is Renee Zellweger from Judy.
I don't want them on stage with me. I don't want them in this phony business, and I don't want them anywhere near the bastards who run it. But you have to let me be with them, Sid. I'm a good mother.
Judy's almost certainly not going to get nominated for anything except Renee. I don't know, maybe, you know, makeup or costumes. But we're kind of back to the dark ages when it comes to Best Actress performances. Recent history, maybe the last 2 or 3 years aside, there had been sort of a troubling trend where the nominees for Best Actress did not front Best Picture nominees, you know, which is an indication that I think Oscar voters and maybe Hollywood tend to prioritize or assign more weight to stories fronted by men. And boy, is that true this year when you have things like Irishman, when you have things like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's very likely that all the nominees, save for Scarlett Johansson and Marriage Story in Best Actress, are going to be from films left out of the Best Picture conversation.
We're talking with Kyle Buchanan from the New York Times about the Screen Actors Guild Awards. We may not agree about whether or not the last three Best Picture winners were deserving, Green Book, Shape of Water, and Moonlight, but I will make an argument that they have something in common. These are all stories about marginalized people, people who have been cast aside. And this is why my argument is going to be that the movie that I said when I saw it the first time, I really thought had a chance to win Best Picture is Jojo Rabbit.
That's not where I thought you'd go with this. I'm excited.
I don't know where you thought I was going to go, but I do think that part of what any awards organization is doing is responding to how they see a film fitting into a larger conversation. This is a movie about somebody who is taught to be hateful and he learns to be accepting. And even though it's a comedy, the Academy historically doesn't like comedies in its Best Picture race. I can make the argument that Jojo Rabbit is the movie for right now.
Even more than a comedy, it's a satire. How often do you see a satire win Best Picture, let alone one directed by the director of Thor Ragnarok? Then again, last year a comedy won directed by the guy who made Dumb and Dumber, so I think anything's possible.
We will crush our enemies into dust, and when they are destroyed, we shall use their graves as toilets.
Okay, no more politics. Dinner is neutral ground. This table is Switzerland. Let's eat.
Jojo Rabbit won the People's Choice Award at the Toronto Film Festival.
An incredibly important award.
Yeah, an award that has gone to, I would say, either the Best Picture winner or the presumptive Best Picture runner-up almost every year. And when that happened, I think a lot of people sat up and took notice. We'll see. You know, as you were delivering all that preamble, John, I thought you might end by saying, Parasite. The Academy is diversifying itself, and foreign language films are going to have to win Best Picture at some point. You know, if one is going to win, I think that this movie, which is so fast and fluid and which feels so contemporary and so easily transposed to the current American class struggle, more and more, especially after what happened with SAG this week, I think Parasite could be the first foreign language film to win Best Picture.
Kyle Buchanan is the Carpetbagger columnist at the New York Times. Kyle, great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up on The Frame, Abby McEnany and Lily Wachowski, co-writers of the new Showtime series Work in Progress, which stars McEnany. Back in January at the Sundance Film Festival, there was a TV pilot we saw that really stood out. The darkly funny Work in Progress was co-created and co-written by director Tim Mason and Chicago comedian Abby McEnany. McEnany also stars in the series, which is loosely based on her own life as a queer, gender nonconforming woman who's struggling with her weight, depression, and OCD. In the pilot episode, Abby's therapist dies in the middle of a counseling session. In this scene, she talks with her sister about what happened.
I just told her that I had given myself 180 days to get happier, or else I was going to end it. And then she dies.
What?
What?
You're suicidal?
I told you that.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, you know what? I did.
I'm pretty sure you didn't.
I'm pretty sure I did.
Jesus, Abby.
I don't know why you get mad at me when
Okay. What are we going to do?
Okay, you know what? Actually, this is a problem you can't fix, so just don't even try, okay?
Well, you have to tell someone.
Well, I did.
Well, she was dead.
I was talking about you.
Work in Progress is now on Showtime, and Lily Wachowski is a co-writer and executive producer on the series. You might know Wachowski from the Matrix movies. Lily came out as a trans woman 3 years ago. When I spoke with Wachowski and Abby McEnany recently, I asked Abby what it was like finding a home for her TV pilot after its Sundance premiere.
One thing about having the pilot being so much in my voice, and it's really me up there being messy and, like, you know, screeching and being awkward, that, like, I was weirdly confident in those meetings in LA. And what I would say, I wasn't confident, but I was way more confident than I would have been because I didn't have to pretend to be anybody else, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm in these LA meetings and I didn't have to pretend I knew what was going on or that I was this, like, slick person. They know I'm this messy kind of verbal vomiter who's, like, trying to figure stuff out. And it gave me a level of confidence that I hadn't had before. Again, it wasn't huge, but it was better than it was. And then also to go in with Lily Wachowski by your side makes you feel pretty good, too.
Slick Lily Wachowski.
I know. So, like, yeah. You got the dirty Abby over here. You got Slick Lily over here. Yeah.
The thing that's, like, cool to me is that the show is, like, extremely honest. And, you know, you ask Abby about, you know, what was it like to put yourself out there like that. You can really feel how honest the show is. And I think, like, that's, like, one of the things that Abby had been doing for so long with her one-woman shows was putting herself out there in, you know, these sort of crystallized versions of what this show is. And so it spoke to me in terms of, like, you know, mental health and depression and being a queer person and a show that embodies, like, you know, people who don't get to have a voice on television.
What you're saying, Lily, is if I'm hearing it right, is that, yes, this is Abby's story, but this is our story.
Well, it's really my story is what I'm trying to say. yes, there is an ourness to it. There is, like, a big queer part of the story that is, like, super important to me, like bringing as many queer people as we could onto the show and our casting. There's a lot of transness in the show besides Theo, who plays Chris.
Can I buy you a drink sometime?
Really? Yeah, actually, I'd love it. I haven't been out for a drink with an attractive woman in a really long time, so.
Actually, I'm a trans man.
Well, I haven't been out with an attractive trans man in ever, so.
The show is extremely subversive in its casting because we have a lot of trans people proliferating the background and supporting cast, like characters who will give, like, one or two lines. Just trans people, something that you see in everyday life, but you don't see represented on television. So that part was, like, felt extremely gratifying to do something that I hadn't necessarily done in my career, you know, being a closeted trans person for so long.
We're talking with Abby McEnany and Lily Wachowski about the series Work in Progress. Well, the other thing, Lily, you hadn't really done is something as funny as this. Obviously, you worked on some series with Sense8 on Netflix. You've done the Matrix franchise. How would you say you adapted to the idea of comedy, and what were you learning along the way about what is and is not funny?
I was just biding my time is what I was really doing. I was auditioning for the comedy scene with all of those side projects. I don't know. It's a, you know, comedy and filmmaking is about timing. And, you know, a kung fu fight is about timing. And action sequences are about timing. And all of the films that I've been a part of are, like, genre movies, and they all are about pace. And, like, you know, you want to make sure that things are moving along. And so I don't necessarily think that you can compartmentalize comedy and something like The Matrix or Bound. I mean, all of those things are like, you know, I think they're all integrated in a way. And, you know, this show isn't just a comedy. To call this show a comedy and only a comedy sells the show short because there's so much more going on in it. It's really about this human experience, but, you know, of specific queer experience. And so, I don't know. I don't know. I think that's a really
good line. In fact, it brings up a clip I wanted to play, and this is one
Way
of the
to segue, Wachowsk.
This is one of the early episodes, and it's funny, but it's about a serious issue, which is what is it like to use a public restroom as someone who's gender nonconforming?
That woman over there just gave me that whole, are you in the right bathroom, love? It still happens? Yeah, Allie, it still happens.
Well, I didn't think that it would happen here.
What are you talking about? It happens everywhere. It's happened to me in gay bars.
What? Come on.
I'm serious. Every single time I go into a public bathroom, I feel unsafe. I even did my, hi, how are you, voice, you know, so she could know that I'm
Julia Child.
A lady. I'm a lady.
Oh, okay. Abby, people are ignorant. You just gotta try and rise above.
Yeah, rise above, totally. Don't be late to your junior league meeting, you That was her.
God, I hope so.
Not sure we can say that on radio,
I was like, wow, John, if we show that, if you're doing the whole clip, I'm going to open up my vocabulary a bunch.
But that scene, I think, is really telling because it gets at a real life issue. It's done in a very personal way. And I'm wondering at those moments how much you're drawing from what you and other people are going through and how you want to make sure that the audience understands that these are things that people have to deal with every day.
All those experiences that we show, I mean, there's some heightened ones that you'll see that seem like ridiculous at the end, like that didn't happen, but they're all real. And I think it is important to share that. I think we also wanted to make sure when we were writing the show, we don't want to do this as a TED Talk, right? Like
right.
We'd be like, oh, does this sound too much like a TED Talk? Because we're not out here to like sit down and proselytize. We just want to show a human story about struggles that most people don't have to think about. The fact that I'm 51 years old and I get nervous when I have to use a public bathroom, like I think that's something people don't think about. And I think that, you know, leads to a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of impatience with queer folks or gender nonconforming folks who are living these struggles, and people really don't care that like they feel hindered in certain situations, and maybe we just want to show that it's not easy. And I would say the thing about the comedy part that, like, you know, Lily, I have to say, one of the funniest people on the face of the planet, but also it is a comedy series, but also it's really, you know, life is hard, and we're not some slapstick comedy. Like, I've struggled with mental illness my whole life, and humor has been my survival tool, I think. It's gotten me and through everything.
Coming up next on The Frame, more of my conversation with Abby McEnany and Lily Wachowsky from the Showtime series Work in Progress. Let's get back now to my conversation with Abby McEnany and Lily Wachowsky about their Showtime series, Work in Progress. One of the main storylines in the show is Abby's confrontation with a woman who she says ruined her life, former Saturday Night Live cast member Julia Sweeney, who created the androgynous character Pat. Sweeney plays herself in Work in Progress, and when we spoke with her at Sundance, Sweeney explained her complicated feelings about the character.
I never even cared about Pat's androgyny that much. I cared about playing this character that was based on a couple of guys who were really annoying, and I got to be annoying in that way.
Are you mad at me, Bill?
No. Why would I be mad at you?
I just thought you might be mad at me.
No, not at all, Miss, not quite sure how to address you.
No formalities here, just call me Pat.
And then we threw in some androgyny jokes to make it interesting, and also because I couldn't really convincingly play a guy, it didn't seem like. But then the way it got taken off to be about making fun of people who were androgynous, which in my mind, it was always making fun of the people for whom they needed to know so much whether Pat was a man or a woman. But that in the larger sense, though, it was true that it was this androgynous character that was really not a flattering depiction of an androgynous character. So because I felt like my intentions were pure, I wasn't responsible for that, the culture taking it that way. Where over time, I thought, no, well, you kind of are.
I think she gets at something that's so important, and that is how much of the way that we see the world is shaped by the way we see others living in the world, in popular culture, on television, and that those depictions can be really powerful and ultimately hurtful.
Yeah, Julia Sweeney. Bitch. Just kidding.
I mean,
she's lovely.
She is the best. That is so funny. She's the best.
Yeah. The trans people have been like portrayed as the punchline or the baddies for basically 100 years. Since the invention of cinema, we've been on screen as this caricature. And you don't have to go back very far. I just finished watching Mindhunter, the serial killer show. And the end of the second season, the big, you know, shocker is that the serial killer, the murder, death, kill guy is, oh, yeah, they get off by wearing women's clothes and choking themselves. And it's the way that they've, like, that was the zinger at the end of the season. I was just like, here we go again. Way to go, guys. You really dug deep for this one. And it's, you know, trans representation and queer representation, you're feeling like we've got our toe in the door and we're trying to wrestle that thing open. But you still feel the resistance. You still feel the pushback by the industry that wants to continue to rely on these lazy-ass stereotypes to continue to, I don't know. I don't know why they do it. It's like there's no forethought at all. Like, is this the right thing to put on screen again and again and again? And it's disheartening, but you know, we're still here and we're still fighting away.
There are a lot of flashbacks in the series, and you see the characters in different eras and different queer spaces. Mm-hmm. In this episode, Abby, you're at a bar with Chris, and this is what happens.
Miller Lite and a whiskey ginger, please.
Coming up.
Hey, do you happen to know what this place used to be called?
What year? It's been a lot of things. It's a concert venue, movie theater. I think it might have been a lesbian bar.
Thank you.
I love this scene, and I'm sorry on radio. You can't, it's like two Indigo Girls type acoustic guitarist, but it does feel like you are kind of saying, this is kind of funny. You're making fun in some ways of the community.
We're making fun of it, although
it's
I did
funny
like,
to me.
I think it's funny. I don't think we're making fun of it. I think that's but I
the
would,
two characters yeah. on stage were called the Earnest Lesbians.
Yeah. And it was like Earnest Lesbo number one and Earnest Lesbo number two. And these Zoe and Sammy, these amazing performers. But yeah, I think a lot of the flashbacks, especially when it was related to Chris and my relationships, was to show how different it was. Like when I came out, and like we see in the pilot that I'm playing charades with friends, and they're all white and they're all cis, and also all of them are dear friends of mine. Two of them are actors, and five of them are not. But that was very much like when I came out in Chicago in, you know, the early 90s. It was a very white and cis experience, and now. You know, that's what I love is that, especially when you live in these vibrant urban, like, you know, cities, and you come out, it's like this beautiful array of gender and sexual identities and people of color and people of different creeds and abilities and sizes. And it's just this, this is very, like, I'm the old lady looking in, but it just seems like amazing acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that was to show, like, as, you know, we look back and it was just very staid, and especially in that scene, like, I'm in this, like, very hip queer party, and I go back and it's like, you know, Ernest Loves One and Two, like, singing these songs. So, yeah. So I kind of making fun, but really just showing that how much, like, the queer community has evolved.
Right. Times have changed.
Yes, yes. Thank God.
Lily and Abby, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's great to talk about the series.
John, it was so fun to talk to you again.
Thanks,
thank you very
John.
Much.
That's Abby McEnany and Lily Wachowski from the series Work in Progress. It airs Sunday nights on Showtime. And that'll do it for today. I'm John Horn. Thanks for listening. We're back here tomorrow at the Moen Broadcast Center.